This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 124. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Well, Berners, it's been an exciting week of cricket, both at club level and at international level this week, what with the England against India series kicking off. And what a test match. Did you get to catch any of it?
Yeah, I did actually. I wangled my way into the long room on Sunday and enjoyed a plateau of free-falling wickets early in the morning, and then, of course, saw Matty Prior score a brilliant 100. So it was a good day's play, and yeah, it's fantastic down at Lord's, actually. 20-odd thousand in there, and it's always great when that place is full, that's for sure. I've also come to the conclusion that I'm going to rename VVS Laxman Mr. Rolex, because his timing is second to none. He just literally caresses the ball. I mean, if British Airways need a few tips on timing, they need to speak to VVS, because that boy, he knows how to play cricket. I was watching him live, and it was a joy to watch him. Man, he's a terrific player. I mean, all the talk about Tendulkar and Dravid and stuff, but for me, Laxman kind of stood out. The way he manipulated the ball, he always had so much time, worked it off of his legs at about 90 mile an hour like it was some three-year-old throwing him a tennis ball. It was quite incredible, actually. I reckon my money would be on him to do some damage at Trent Bridge. He looked in good nick, and I think Trent Bridge will be a good challenge for England, because you're going to see, you know, what the Indians are all about now with their Bollywood-esque stars. I think there will be a right royal battle in Nottingham.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with Laxman, isn't it? You know, he doesn't so much hit the ball as he's just the middle point between the bowler and the boundary. You know, it's just so effortless, isn't it? You almost wonder if he's actually there.
Yeah.
It's so smooth. So, I mean, it makes you wonder how somebody gets to that point of being able to time the ball so effortlessly and calmly. That's an interesting area that I haven't got an exact answer to. Is there something deep in the genes that allows you to be such a smooth stroke maker, or is it something just that you learn when you're little? I don't know the answer to that.
Just hand-eye coordination, the ability to pick the ball up really early, and I guess it's a lot of natural talent as well, being able, you know, timing is something that's, you know, quite often can't be taught. It's something you just pick up yourself. So playing lots of cricket and being in certain situations definitely helps that. All the best players in the world have time, you know, great timing to a certain degree. But I mean, if you look at someone like Kevin Peterson, I'd say he's more of a hitter of the ball. He kind of goes at the ball, and he's a very sweet timer, but he actually goes to actually meet the ball. You look at Laxman, he kind of lets the ball come into him, then he almost flicks it. He's just deviating the direction of the ball off of the sweet spot of the bat at times, which is, I mean, that's got to be the way to play, because you're totally eliminating the amount of risk that's involved. And just the power as well. I mean, he's a big guy and just really seemed to thump it about the park. It was good. But anyway, there's been a bit of turmoil down under as well. Have you read the latest there?
Yeah, I see that yet another spinner has been selected by the Australian selectors. What is that? The 20th spinner in three Test matches, or something like that.
I've got some news on that actually. Joey was here, and he was vying for that position. He was bouncing around my lounge. He really wanted to get in the mix, but they picked this no-hoper from South Australia. Can I say that? Is that kind of right? Am I going to get attacked for being racist there? But yeah, Nathan Lyon's come in, hasn't he, for Stephen Smith. He's been diminished back to Milo cricket, and they finally realised he's not very good, which I think we could have all told them about 3 years ago, actually. But yeah, so we'll see what this guy Lyon's can do. Who knows?
Well, he looks dangerous. Of course, he's played 4 first-class matches, and
fantastic.
And he averages a devastating 43. So he's really going to make the Sri Lankans struggle, I think.
I reckon Dilshan might have to be forced onto the aeroplane.
Yeah, he'd be first in the queue, won't he? Yeah. Where do I sign?
Where do I sign?
So yeah, but you know, it's not like Australia have got a great spinner to fall back on. You know, Warney's busy playing poker, isn't he? So he's not coming back. So yeah, there's a gap in the market, and I think the key is, and this is true at every level. You know, it's just as true at club level, because we've experienced a similar issue for different reasons, but a similar issue. You've got to be consistent with your selection. Okay, you know, if someone's out of form, then you've got to drop them. I can understand that, but you've got to give people a chance. You know, I mean, if you don't give people a run in the side, if they're in and out of the team's changing every week, then, well, if you can't select consistently, then how can you expect a consistent performance from the team?
Yep, too right.
I mean, at my club, it's slightly different. We've had consistency issues as well, and it's slightly different in that, you know, people have been unavailable for various reasons, and you know that's a unique problem to amateur cricket, of course, and slightly different at the top level. But still, you have to be as consistent as you can, and let somebody know that you're not going to drop them if they have a bad series. You're going to say to them, look, we're going to give you a run in the team. We're going to back you. Don't worry if you do badly to start with, because you know we're going to make sure that we develop you. So I think Australia at the moment are just scrabbling around and don't really know what to do, because there's no obvious choice for a spinner, but they know they've got to have one.
There was quite an interesting feed on the lunch break actually, which spoke about how it's strange through Warne's kind of era that there weren't kind of more up and coming chickens who were all thinking, I want to be Shane Warne. But they established that the fact that he was probably actually so good and such a freak actually probably had a reverse psychology on people, thinking, well, I can never actually achieve what he's doing, so yeah, I'll just bowl lollipops or I'll go and play AFL. so it kind of, he was actually so good, you could see that, because people are watching him bowling these amazing googlies and turning the ball both ways and probably trying to do similar things with their wrist and just not being able to do it and just thinking, we're not going to do it. So kids either became like off-break bowlers or seamers or batsmen, and no one really took over his legacy, I guess.
And speaking of spinners, coming up now, next is an interview with a spin bowling coach from Pitch Vision Academy. Menno Gazendam is on the spin bowling panel for Pitch Vision Academy, and he has a resource called Spin Bowling Tips. And we chat spin bowling with him. So whether you've got aspirations to play for Australia or whether you just want to take a few more wickets on a Sunday afternoon, you can have a listen to the interview that's coming up now. Every week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we have an interviewee, and this week it's Menno Gazendam, who is one of the spin bowling coaches on the Pitch Vision Academy coaching panel. So we're very lucky to have him live with us on the line. So we're going to talk a little bit about spin bowling. That's your speciality. So I suppose we should start with something which a lot of spinners who are listening to this will be thinking, which is why do things go wrong? Why can't I be the next Shane Warne?
That's a difficult one. I think Shane Warne only comes along once a century, so I wouldn't put my hopes and aspirations that high. And if I don't reach Shane Warne's quality, then give up. But to me, Why spin bowlers maybe fail, not so much fail, but not reach the levels that they would like. It's probably more to do with the system failing them than actually themselves. I believe spin bowlers don't get the support they necessarily should, like batsmen or bowlers. And if I think about this, I can list a few ways that spin bowlers don't get support, and one of them is probably there's not enough specialist spin coaches. And when we look at international coaches, We find that most of the national coaches are ex-batsmen. If we're just thinking off the top of my head, I'm thinking Andy Flower, John Wright, Gary Kirsten, Bob Woomer, Bob Simpson, Mickey Arthur. they're all batsmen. And you do get bowling coaches. Eric Simons for India at the moment. Alan Donald has just been appointed for South Africa as their bowling coach. But once again, fast bowlers. You don't see specialist spin bowling coaches that much. One team that does get it right at the moment is England. Andy Flowers got hold of Mushtaq Ahmed, I think, is their bowling coach, their spin bowling coach. And he's done wonders for helping Graham Swan. I mean, Graham Swan is the top spinner in the world at the moment. And there's no denying that having a specialist spin bowling coach in the team surely could help them. So you find that people that go into coaching are usually not spin bowlers. And no offense to these coaches, they're all great coaches, but they're not spin bowlers. And sure, they know the mechanics and the basics of spin bowling, but they don't actually understand what it's like to be a young spin bowler. So they don't have that sort of empathy which another spin bowling coach might have. And that goes right down to especially big problem at junior level. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't have any specialist spin bowling coaches around. I was fortunate enough that I was good enough to be drafted into trials and to provincial teams, that sort of thing. So I got hold of Ashley Mallett, who used to play for Australia. He does a bit of spin bowling coaching around the world. And at that point, he was touring South Africa. Not touring South Africa. He was on a spin bowling sort of academy he was holding in South Africa. And for a few seasons, while I was a teenager, I studied under him. So that was a great opportunity for me. But once again, I guess I got lucky. You don't find that at sort of general club level or school level. Captains and coaches, they don't encourage aggressive spin bowling. They want spin bowlers to be defensive bowlers, to hold one end up. It's rare that you find a coach or a captain that's mature enough that understands spin bowling and understands the fact that a spin bowler will go for more runs than your quicks. It's just a fact of life. The batsman chances are more against spin bowlers, and sometimes they get away with more runs against bowlers like that. So we'd need more brave captains and coaches out there who encourage spin bowlers to bowl on an attacking line, to go for wickets and not take them off and make a hit for 1 6 or 2 sixes. It's very demoralizing when you get hit for a 6 or 2, you get taken off and then get bowled again. It's just not the way you mentor a young spin bowler. Two little things I'd like to add there is, I know it's prevalent in South Africa at the moment. I used to play in England, and I guess it's not someone's fault, but you see this high level is that there's not enough friendly spin bowling pitches. There's all flat tracks that is made for batting. That's not encouraging at all for a spin bowler. And then you get way too many what I call average spin bowlers. Spin bowling is easy to do, but it's very difficult to master. So you get lots of sort of average guys just turning their arm over in a game, and that doesn't do anything to promote spin bowling. So I'd say for spin bowlers to fail, it's not a case of failing. It's when they do bad, they don't have the support. And all these reasons I've listed now, they don't have that support system to encourage them for when they are down, is to bring them up and bring them through the ranks. When a fast bowler thinks he's almost there, maybe going down through a bad patch and thinking he's failing, then he's got a system. He's got a fast bowling coach and a head coach supporting him, helping him through it. Whereas our spin bowlers, they have to fend for themselves. So sort of a lone discipline in cricket. I think if we can do those things right, if we can get realize the fact that to coach spin bowling, you actually need a spin bowler. Again, no offense to any other coach, they know their stuff, but it's more to do with the fact that they understand what a young spin bowler goes through, and to pull them through any sort of bad patch or bad part in their career where they feel they're not making it. A real spin coach can actually help pull them through that.
And that must be a very frustrating experience for a spin bowler. That if you think, oh, well, you know, I've got a bit of something here, you know, you go into the nets and you're giving it a rip and it is turning, yeah, and you're thinking, I've got a little bit of something here, but it's almost like you're at a dead end. you know, the captain doesn't have any faith in you. You can't afford to pay a specialist coach. So that must be extraordinarily frustrating as a spinner to be in a situation like that.
It has to be. I mean, like I say, I was fortunate that I, by pure chance, I was just good enough to get into the trials and, you know, go into the provincial and get to Alisher Ashley Mallet, where, I mean, he was one of the best spin bowlers out in the 70s and one of the top coaches in the world today. And so studying under him was very fortunate, but I see it around me every day. You find spinners that there's no support for them. I mean, besides the lack of technical skills, the fact that the coach has not been a spin bowler himself doesn't really understand the spin bowling, and the spin bowler needs to be nurtured over a long period of time. Yes, it is frustrating. My only advice can be, if you are a spin bowler, don't have access to a top coach, try and find access to a top coach. Maybe go to a club that does have a coach who's a spin bowler. There are good books around. I mean, I'm doing this course on Petrovision. I know there's other spin bowling coaches on there as well. Get hold of that. See if that helps you. There's lots of different ways and materials. Not one way is going to work for for everyone. But try and find everything you can. Do research on the internet. Lots of free stuff on there as well. Watch cricket videos. There's a whole range of things you can go to before you give up. But just because you don't have a coach you can ask every day, it makes it more difficult, but don't give up on that. In fact, there's a lot of good material out there, and if you find something doesn't work for you, then try something else. People respond differently, and that's why you get coaches and get spin bowling coaches, is because we learn from people we connect to. So the way someone teaches one thing might not work for everyone, but it might work for you. So I wouldn't give up if you don't have a spin bowler. There's a lot of material out there, good material out there, and I would try and get my hands on it.
It's the questions section portion of the show now, and as usual, we are giving away a prize for the best question, and that's a coaching course, a Pitch Vision Academy coaching course, which is delivered online at pitchvision.com/academy. You can find out all the courses we've got there, highly specific courses for a range of topics from some of the best in the world in their areas. So, Berners, we've got a couple of questions this week. Which two have you picked out that we can answer for lucky listeners?
We've got a first question here from Paul. It's all about fielding and walking in, which is one of those aspects of the game which is often not really worried about too much. But he's just saying that he's got into a bit of a conflict with his new captain.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, the captain doesn't think too much of fielding by the sound of things. There aren't any fielding drills. They don't do any fielding prior to the game or in training, but then has the audacity to complain during the game about everybody walking in or walking in too much or not walking in at all. So balls falling a little bit short and then balls going over the head. That sounds like the sort of captain that you can't win with, because he wants you to retrieve everything. So he's turned around. He's asked the captain, look, how far do I walk in? And quite bluntly, he's got a reply from the captain: you should know. So he's saying, I obviously don't know. So he's asking, what is the kind of average amount of distance that you should be walking in if you're, say, fielding at mid-on or backward square leg, and how the different positions could affect your walking in style and where you should be stood? So quite an interesting question there, Coach.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a few different schools of thought, actually. So I'd like, Berners, I'd like to know your opinion on this. What do you do from your position at cover point?
Well, I definitely always walk in. You definitely always walk in. You're definitely always on your toes. I tend to try and stay quite low, because one of my coaches always told me that 90% of the time the ball's going to be coming at your feet, so it makes sense to stay low. So I'd bend my knees a little bit, almost ascertain a kind of slip position as the player's about to make contact with the ball, and I almost have a knee-jerk reaction wherever he actually hits the ball. So even if he's hit it to the other side of the field, I will naturally be ready to collect the ball if it was to come with me, maybe a leading edge or coming near me, and certainly make sure that I'm consistent in my walking in and make sure I'm going back to the same position every time, and make sure really importantly, that the captain knows where I am. And if I think I may be in the wrong position, I'll shout to him in between balls and say, do you want me a little bit deeper? Do you want me a little bit finer or straighter? Yeah. Just so that in the scenario that he's mentioned there, that the ball does go over my head. Well, a bit like in all walks of life, I'm trying to clear myself and say, you told me to stand here, buddy. So that's what I tend to do. And obviously different positions, if you're on the boundary, you're maybe not walking in quite so bouncy in your style as you would if you were in the ring, where, you know, there's a lot of action and you might have to dive or might have to do something like that. I would say if I'm in the deep, I'm more likely getting ready to actually take off, to actually retrieve the ball and get it in as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good advice. I think the key, as I said, there's a few different ways to do it, but I think the key is do something that makes you feel comfortable and in rhythm and ready to move in whatever direction you need to move in. Because fielding, especially in the ring, is, as you say, all about being agile and being able to get to the ball quickly. And you might have to put in a dive, or you know, you're going to have to run quickly to the left or the right, or sprint in to stop a quick single. So you have to be set up to be able to do all of those things. The modern way of doing it is to walk in, so your weight is going forward. You don't need to walk in too much. You know, it could be maybe just be two or three steps, and then get yourself into the set position like a goalkeeper, like a football goalkeeper, a soccer goalkeeper. You know, the set athletic position where your weight is on the balls of your feet. You're on both feet at the same time, and your hands are ready. So if the ball comes to you quickly, you can pull off that great catch. Jonty Rhodes, one of the finest fielders of recent times, didn't do that. He would absolutely hair in. I don't know if you remember Jonty doing this, but he'd virtually be sprinting in as the ball was bowled from point. It would be an amazing sight to watch, because he'd be in full flight as the ball was delivered, and he'd be so quick and agile, he could still move in any direction, even though he was hairing in like a runaway jackrabbit. But he had a very, very long walk in, and it was ended up as a run in by the end. So that's what he felt comfortable with. So you have to do what you feel comfortable with. The general advice is maybe 3, 4, 5 yards you're walking in, but the key is that you're not walking in as the ball is bowled, because you don't want to be off balance. If you got all your weight on one side because you're still walking, then if you need to turn quickly to go in the opposite direction, you can't do it, because your foot's in the air. You can't push off when your foot's in the air. So you need to make sure that both feet are on the ground and you're in that ready position. As you say, Berners, when you're in the deep, it's slightly different. You don't have to be quite in the goalkeeper style position, because it's not going to be drilled at you. You don't have to make a save. You have to be ready to pick up the ball as early as you can, and if it's coming in the air, get yourself set underneath it. If it's coming on the ground, get to it as quickly as you can.
I always try and field in the deep closest to the clubhouse when we're fielding first, so I can get into the tea room first.
Yeah, that's good.
And also, if you've got friends watching, you always want to be a boundary roper, so you can chat with them and have a little bite of their pork pie and a swig of Coke. And they'll also tell you the latest football scores. You know that little bit of the season where it overlaps?
Yep.
And you're out in the middle and you really need to know if, like, Villa are one up, and you just don't know, and the drinks break comes and you run in, you're trying to check your mobile, and the captain's like, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the toilet a minute. But then your mate's walking around the boundary with his iPhone and his iPad, and he's there, it's 1-0 to Villa. You know, normally it's not the case, we're normally about 3 down, but it's good to be near the boundary rope. It's just, you get a bit more kind of stuff going on, and there can potentially be a few hot chicks as well sometimes where I play. So yeah, everyone's vying for that position. But
so when you play at home, is it away team to the tea room first, or is it every man for himself?
It's me first and then the others.
After that, you don't care.
They need to sort it out, because it's been monotonous. It's been the same old stuff, the same old chicken kebabs and pasta and these kind of sandwiches. The bread's awful. They just need to shake it up a bit. I might get Delia in.
Well, you pay a lot of money for your tea, so I can understand, and I do enjoy it. Being a lower order batsman and wicketkeeper, I do enjoy when we field first. I'm not going to lie.
Fill your boots, lad. Fill your boots.
I'm not going to lie because, you know, I can go up for the third plate, safe in the knowledge that even if I do have to bat, it's going to be long enough for the digestive system to have worked its full effect on the jam tarts.
A big kick in.
What's the next question, Berners?
So we've got a bowling question here, all about consistency,
yeah.
I think. I'm having trouble developing a consistent run-up. I bowl off of 19 steps, and at the start of the season, I've had to rebuild my run-up as it doesn't feel right. I start off taking two small steps from the bowling mark, then I start to run at a steady speed, and so I hit the crease, then release the ball. What he's found out is that when he doesn't practice every week, at least for an hour or two, when it comes to the match, he's all at sea. So he's shuffling around in his run-up, and he doesn't have the pace, and he has to revert to shorter strides in his run-up. So he's not actually running in with any purpose. So he was wondering what's going on, but from my perspective there, it looks like he's analysed it himself, and when he doesn't train, it doesn't work. So I would say that's quite a good starting point, you know, not doing something regularly and then going into a match there. It's a bit like playing golf when you put your ball on the tee and you haven't played for a month, it ends up in someone's greenhouse. It's probably the same with fast bowling and the mechanics behind that, but I'm sure you can elaborate somewhat, coach.
Well, yeah, again, with run-up, it's one of those things that as long as you get the basics right, then it's just really down to how it feels to you individually. So if you're, you know, if you feel, yes, this run-up is right for me, but I need to practice to get it right because he's changed it, then yeah, then practice. It's not going to be the case that you have to practice for an hour before every game forevermore. Because he's changed his run-up, he will be able to get the feel of it eventually. But it's a matter of putting in that work. You know, it's the whole 10,000 hours to mastery and all that kind of thing. You see the classic sort of old lag medium pace bowler who barely has to mark his run-up out anymore. He just knows, yeah. He just knows exactly where it is. He knows exactly where the line is, and he just comes in and pops the ball on a length without having to practice at all, because he's just got that muscle memory, and he just doesn't need to practice it anymore. He's done it so many times, he's mastered it. Well, yeah. You know, if you've only this season got a new run up and it still doesn't quite feel right, then yeah, there's no way around it. You know, you're going to have to keep working on it until it does feel right. And if you get to the point where you're thinking, well, hang on a minute, this is never going to feel right, then you're going to have to change it again. I know the person who's emailed in isn't young, because one of the problems you get with young bowlers, teenage bowlers, is that their stride length changes from season to season. You know, you get your 12-year-old who's got a brilliant run-up, and he comes back next year, he's 13, and he's 6'1", and suddenly, he's all over the shop. You know, he's grown in the winter. You always see them. I think they get stuck in grow bags come September, and they don't come out until January, and they're massive. So, you know, if that happens, then you know that's a matter of stride length. You're going to have to redo your run up for your new length of your legs. But of course, once you're fully grown, that's not a worry anymore. So. The key is really don't try and base your run-up around somebody else. Don't think, oh well, Brett Lee does it this way, therefore I must do it this way. Do what feels right to you. What helps with that is if you're not quite sure whether what you've got is right, is to just go onto the park somewhere and do your run-up without bowling, and get someone to mark where you start and where you finish, and then you can measure it out with your normal paces. That's your most natural run-up. And then it's, as you say, Berners, it's another one of those answers where the simple answer is the correct answer, which is if it doesn't feel right unless you practice it for a while, then practice it for a while. It's not going to be the case forever. You know, in 6 months' time, in a year's time, it'll feel natural to you. But for now, you know, do your 1 hour of warm-ups before you start, and make sure that you get it done. You don't have to bowl at full pace, but make sure your run-ups, you're doing your run-up for full length.
Absolutely. And of course, Pitch Vision here, we've considered every element of this, and we've actually got a new product coming out to the mass market, which is a Pitch Vision pitch ruler, which is going to enable bowlers to have a clear insight as to, you know, the exact lengths of their run-ups and be able to plot themselves against that, maybe looking at how large their strides are for a coach to use that in conjunction with players as well to pinpoint their length and also their run-ups and things like that. So check that one out for sure on our website.
Yeah, pitchvision.com. And that is all we've got time for on the show this week, but we'll be back next week with some more questions. But don't worry, we've still got a couple of things that we need to talk about. Berners, before we go, the first and most important of which is who we're going to give the prize to this week. So, Berners, what do you think? Who's going to win the...
I feel really sorry for Paul that his captain's accusing him of not being like Mr. Go-Go Gadget and being able to catch things in front of him, behind him, on top of him. You know, it sounds like it's mission impossible for the poor lad, so let's at least give him a free course and cheer him up. I mean, he doesn't even get a fielding drill before he practices before a game, so let's give him something, coach.
Well, he sounds a bit frustrated by the whole situation. I'd like to know a little bit more about it, but it doesn't sound like it's easy, whatever's happening. So, yes, a coaching course to help you, perhaps have a look at something to do with your fielding, and let's work on a Pitch Vision product which extends fielder's arms to 20 feet.
It's Pitch Vision Robot Fielder.
Yeah.
Retrieving balls at a ground near you.
Yeah. With a huge extendable arms and feet and massive hands. You'll never drop another ball. So Paul wins the prize, which is a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy from pitchvision.com. And if you want to win a similar prize and also you want to get your coaching question answered by us or one of our experts on the show, then you can contact us with your question and we will get you on the show to answer it. So Berners, if someone wants to get in touch with us, how can they do that?
They can just drop us a little phone call on 020-8816-7691. Or alternatively, get on to the old email and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
The phone number is an answer phone, so if you want to leave your question on there, you can have as many goes as you like leaving the question. There's no human being to talk to there, and you can always email us if you're really nervous. You can also get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach and on Facebook. We are Pitch Vision Academy. Do a little search for that and you'll find us. You can also get us on iTunes. If you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy there, you'll find us. And you can subscribe to the show without having to check back. It'll automatically download it every time you open your iTunes. If you don't use iTunes, for example, if you've got an Android phone like me, I'm very excited about that. Then you can subscribe to the show with the feed, which you can get at pitchvision.com. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week.